I mean, really, it was him.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the regular meeting of the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, the Lahontan Region. My name is Jack Clark, and I'm from Apple Valley, and I serve as the board's chair. I'd like to thank members of the public for being here this evening. We do a better job when you participate in the issues that come before us. At this time, I'd like to introduce the other members of the regional board. On my left, Vice Chair Mike Dispenza from Palmdale. Next to him is Don Jardine from Markenville. And over on my right, I have Keith Dias from Roseman, and Eric Sandell from Truckee, and Jim Charlton from Palmdale.
James.
I always mess up James's name. Sitting next to me is Harold Singer, our executive officer. And Harold, would you please introduce staff?
Thank you, yes. I'd like to introduce Lori Applegate, the board secretary, assisted this evening by Eric Shea. Their role tonight is to help facilitate the meeting, so if you have any questions about how the meeting is being run or if you'd like to put in a speaker card, please hand it to one of them and they will make sure it gets up to the chair. Also want to introduce tonight Lori Kemper and Chuck Curtis, Doug Smith, Judith Unsicker, and Tom Sook. And finally, I'd like to introduce David Koop. David is on staff at the State Water Resources Control Board and is the board's attorney.
Thank you, Harold. The regional board will be considering many items during this meeting. Although we must use our time wisely, we encourage your input on any item or decision that comes before us. If you wish to speak on any agenda item, please fill out one of these cards, and tell us what item you wish to speak to and how many minutes you'll need. Although we do not administer an oath in most proceedings before this board, we expect all statements to be made before this board to be truthful with no attempts to mislead by false statements, deceptive presentations, or failure to include essential information. We also ask that you abide by our ground rules. Treat everyone with respect. This includes board members, board staff, and anyone who testifies. In the interest of everyone's time, please communicate your ideas clearly and efficiently. So that we can develop an accurate administrative record, we ask that you speak only after you are recognized. At that time, please come to the lectern and speak to the agenda item. If you do not follow these rules or become repetitious, I may ask you to sit down. If you are aggrieved by a decision of the Regional Water Board covered by Water Code Section 13320, you may petition the State Water Resource Control Board to review that decision. The State Board must receive the petition within 30 days of the Regional Board meeting at which the action was taken. Board staff will provide you with copies of the regulation about filing a petition if you request them. They are also available on the State Water Resource Control Board website. At this time, first item is a public forum. I don't have any cards on a public forum, so if no one wishes to speak, we will move to item 4, which is the minutes of the regular meeting of June 10th and 11th in Victorville.
I'll make a motion. We approve the minutes.
I have a motion, Mr. Dias, second, Mr. Dispenza, that we approve the minutes as mailed. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. The next item is the adoption of the uncontested calendar, which include items 8 and 9, and there have been...
Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of the uncontested calendar with the two late revisions.
Wait. Do I hear a
second?
We have a motion, Mr. Sandell, second, Mr. Spencer, to adopt items 8 and 9 as amended. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We will move to item 6. It's a public hearing. This is the time and place for the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, Lahontan Region, to hold a public hearing on proposed recommendations for changes to the Clean Water Act, Section 303D, list of impaired surface water bodies. Public testimony will also be accepted on staff's assessment of non-impaired waters under the Clean Water Act 305B. No formal action will be taken on this assessment. Following public testimony and discussion by board members, the board will consider adopting a resolution transmitting recommendations to the State Water Resource Control Board. Staff will also transmit all comments received, including those received during this hearing, and staff written response to the state board. The order of presentation for this hearing will be as follows. Presentation by staff, testimony by public agencies, testimony by other interested persons. All persons who wish to participate and have not submitted an orange card, please do so now. This hearing will not be conducted according to the technical rules of evidence. The board will accept any testimony that is reasonable relevant to the matter under consideration. The chair may impose reasonable time limits and may require groups to choose a single spokesperson. We ask that each person testify come to the lectern to speak. Please begin by stating your name, address, and whom you represent. First item will be staff presentation.
I'd like to ask Judith Unsicker to make the presentation.
Thank you. I'm Judith Unsicker. I'm a staff environmental scientist with the South Lake Tahoe Office of the Regional Board. Before I begin, we found out this afternoon that there are some quality assurance, quality control problems with our phosphorus data that were behind two of the new recommended listings on your late revisions packet. And if there are questions about this later on, Tom Sook is here and can answer them, go into the reasons behind this, but we're going to recommend that you not list for phosphorus, the two items on your pink sheet. Okay. This is an overview of the presentation. I want to explain what sections 305B and 303D are, go over the methodology we use in the assessment, summarize the results of the assessment and the public comments and responses. We only received one set of public comments, written comments. Can you hear me? There is an audio microphone here I can turn on if there are problems.
Be better.
Is that better?
Thank you.
Okay. Anyway, I'm just going to go over the process and the public comments and responses. We received some comments from the State Water Board and EPA staff, and I want to summarize their issues and conclude with our recommendation. Section 303D requires states to identify surface water bodies, and this is important, it's only surface water bodies, that are not meeting their standards due to pollutants, including pollutants from natural sources. The states must also identify surface waters needing total maximum daily loads, remedial strategies to address the problems. And the Section 303D list is normally updated every 2 years. This is technically the 2008 Section 303D list update process, but there's been a delay due to development of the database. We talk about waters with standards violations as being impaired. And for purposes of this process, Section 303D listed waters are assumed to be not supporting their beneficial uses. This assumes there's a one-to-one relationship between standards and beneficial uses, and that's not the case for many of the Region 6 standards, which are based on preserving historic water quality. A slight violation of a numeric standard based on historical quality doesn't necessarily mean that you can't swim in or fish in or drink the water. Section 305B requires states to report to EPA every 2 years on the degree of beneficial use support for all surface waters, and this includes good quality waters as well as the impaired waters. And EPA summarizes this information in a report to Congress for all of the states. We've noticed the board action only for 303D list recommendations to the State Water Board. We entered quite a lot of assessment data into the database, and those will be used by the State Water Board to prepare its 305B assessment. At the direction of the State Board, we invited public comments on both the 303D and 305B assessment. Once it gets recommendations from all of the regional boards, the State Water Board will hold its own public participation process and approve a statewide Section 303D list for transmittal to EPA. EPA will approve the final list. And again, the State Board will use the information in the database to produce a statewide integrated report that meets the requirements of both sections of the Clean Water Act. I want to go through our methodology in the assessment process. First of all, the data that we use. We focused on the Surface Water Ambient Monitoring Program, or SWAMP data. This was the largest data set. We had data submitted by various stakeholders, and we focused on data that would enable us to change the existing Section 303D listings. In particular, I want to thank Bruce Warden and his staff for collecting and analyzing and crunching a lot of bacteria data for streams in the Lake Tahoe Basin. We used state water quality objectives to assess the data, including drinking water maximum contaminant levels that apply to ambient waters that are designated for the municipal and domestic supply use. And again, most of our water quality objectives are based on historically high water quality. Our numeric objectives and tables at the back of Basin Plan Chapter 3 are based on fairly limited numbers of samples. And because of this violation of these objectives, again, does not necessarily mean that beneficial uses are impaired. We also used EPA's California Toxics Rule standards for toxic metals and organic compounds. And we used, where there were no state or federal standards, we used available state and federal water quality criteria. The difference between standards and criteria basically is that standards have regulatory weight and criteria do not. We use the State Water Board's listing policy that was adopted in 2004. The last time that the regional board voted on recommendations to the State Water Board was in 2002, so the policy has really changed the way we do business on the 303D list. It prescribes sample numbers and numbers of violations of standards or criteria that are needed for listing or delisting a particular water body pollutant combination. And in general, you need fewer samples and fewer violations to list something for toxic pollutants than for other types of pollutants. And the policy treats nutrients as toxicants. So you need fewer samples to list for, say, nitrogen or phosphorus than you would for total dissolved solids. This is part of the information from a table in the listing policy. It shows that this is the table for toxic substances and nutrients. It shows that if you have 2 to 24 samples, you can list if there are at least 2 violations of standards. And there is a sliding scale as you get more samples. For water quality objectives that are expressed as annual means, each average is treated as a single data point in this table, and therefore if you had only 2 annual average data points and both exceeded the objective, even if the averages are based on small numbers of samples, under this table you would need to list. But we do have an alternative out for not listing, and I'll go into that later. And the policy makes it more difficult to delist a water body pollutant combination than to list it. Delisting means removing it from the list. And going back to this table, the minimum sample number for delisting a toxic pollutant is 26. So for an annual average standard, if we wanted to wait until we got enough data to do list without doing anything else, we would need to wait at least 26 years to to accumulate this information. The listing policy does give us discretion not to list if the data are not temporarily representative or if the quality assurance quality control information is faulty. And this is a quote from the policy explaining we have some flexibility. For members of the public who don't have a copy of this presentation, there should be handouts from the presentation on the table. Okay, this is a summary of the results from our assessment. There is a database being used in this process that was developed by EPA's consultants, Tetra Tech. It took them quite a long time to get it ready, and that's a major reason for the delay in the update process. It's called the CalWQA or CalWACA database, and the process consists of creating lines of evidence which include the data set being addressed for a particular water body and pollutant, information about the water body, and so on. And then you combine lines of evidence into water body fact sheets. So we have over 1,700 lines of evidence and 1,266 fact sheets for this year's assessment. We assessed a total of 77 water bodies or water body segments. We divided some of the streams into segments, for instance, because they have different objectives applying at different stations. I want to run through the Section 305B situation very quickly because I want to concentrate on 303D near the end of this presentation. The process groups water bodies into five different categories for purposes of the integrated report based on the degree of beneficial use support. Category one means that all beneficial uses were assessed, or all key beneficial uses, basically the Clean Water Act fishable, swimmable, drinkable type uses, and all of the beneficial uses were supported. Well, it's very difficult to conclude scientifically the beneficial use is fully supported, and we were allowed to use professional judgment on this, and we decided we didn't have any Category 1 water bodies. The next category, Category 2, includes waters where you assessed some but not all of the beneficial uses, and the uses you assessed either were supported or there was insufficient information to assess them, but at least some of the beneficial uses are supported. Category 3 is insufficient information for assessment. Most of the non-impaired water bodies we assessed are in this category. Category 4 is for waters that have violated their standards, but a TMDL is not needed, either because EPA has already approved the TMDL or because there is an alternate program that's addressing the problem, or because the impairment is not due to a pollutant. This would be in cases where, say, the impairment was due to low flows. That's not a pollutant, so it goes into different categories. And the final category is for waters with a standard violated, and they still need a TMDL. So categories 4 and 5 together constitute the Section 303D list. I've already gone over this. We have a lot of waters in Category 3. We have a few in Category 2, and the impaired waters will go in 4 and 5. Okay, for Section 303D, we, as of early today, recommended 8 new Section 303D listings. As of now, we're recommending 6. We have 13 D listings. 6 water bodies, and this includes waters that were already listed plus one new one, are being added to Category 4B. This is for waters that are being addressed by actions other than TMDL. So the total new and existing Section 303D listings with our current revised recommendations would be 94. Okay, the D listings are, well, this just summarizes the water bodies and pollutants, and I'll go briefly through why we're delisting them. Two tributaries to Lake Tahoe that were listed for pathogens are now meeting their standards. The Forest Service has not had grazing in these watersheds for many years, and standards are now attained. We revised the percent sodium water quality objectives for the West Fork Carson River a couple of years ago, so we get to delist those two segments since the new standards are being met. The East Walker River is listed, the segment below Bridgeport Reservoir, for nitrogen and phosphorus. I took a hard look at the standards, and they are actually for the segment of the river that is above Bridgeport Reservoir, so we have no state standards for that segment, and we can justify removing the nitrogen and phosphorus listings. Hot Springs Canyon Creek is listed for sedimentation siltation. It's in the Bodie Hills. It was listed due to an earlier U.S. Bureau of Land Management grazing study, and regional board staff and BLM staff have inspected the watershed. BLM has a new report out. Management practices have been implemented, so we have justified delisting this for sediment. Mammoth Creek is one of the streams that we divided into segments. The whole creek was listed for metals, and it's also listed for mercury. The metals listing was kind of unspecified, and we feel we're going from a sort of a general to a specific situation. We're not justifying any new listings for other metals, so we're removing the general metals listing from Mammoth Creek. The whole creek is now listed for mercury based on fish tissue. The headwater segment of the creek is above a dam that restricts fish passage, so we don't have any tissue data from that segment, and we can delist it for mercury. And finally, the Twin Lakes, which are in this segment above the dam of Mammoth Creek, were listed originally for eutrophication on the basis of qualitative data about macrophyte growth, and we have no quantitative data about nitrogen and phosphorus, so listing would not be required under the current policy, and we can justify delisting the lakes. New listings. Mesquite Springs and Death Valley are an existing drinking water source for the campground near Scotty's Castle. And the drinking water standards for arsenic and boron were violated. We feel listing the springs is justified, even though there's only one sample per year and only two samples total, because the springs come from a groundwater source that would be expected to be more stable and less variable than a stream. We are recommending listing Cold Creek in the Lake Tahoe Basin for nitrogen. This is the creek you just voted on the restoration project. We have data from the Forest Service for stations above and below the restoration area, and the objective was violated below the disturbed area. So we're recommending listing the creek for nitrogen now, but recognizing it as Category 4B, where the restoration program will eventually ensure attainment of standards, so DMDL will not be required for this. We also recommended a new listing for the West Fork Carson River for nitrate. This is the segment above Woodford's, if I recall correctly. The river is already listed for nitrogen. We used data for all forms of nitrogen in the previous listing, and this time around, the State Water Board staff want us to do separate lines of evidence for nitrate, so this is just a statistical thing. It's not saying the river is any worse than we thought it was before. Listings in gold on the slide are the ones that are included on your late revision sheet. Again, there are quality problems with the phosphorus data that we had recommended for the East Carson River and the West Walker River, and we're no longer recommending those listings. Two segments of the Mojave River exceed the site-specific water quality objectives or the maximum contaminant level, actually, and the maximum contaminant level for one segment. So we're recommending listing for fluoride. It's probably from natural sources, and we may be able to address this through plan amendments later to clarify our natural source language. But for right now, we're recommending listing. Okay, we are not recommending listing. Now, this would be for 40 water body pollutant combinations that violate their standards and meet the table's requirements for minimum sample size and minimum violation number requirements. But we are not recommending listing because of inadequate temporal representation or poor quality assurance. Part of the TMDL action is to identify schedules for doing TMDLs, although we probably will address most of our existing listings either through changes in standards or alternate programs. But to meet EPA requirements, we have put estimated TMDL completion dates for all Category 5 listings into the table, which is with your resolution. And a completion date no later than 2019 was assigned for everything on the current 2006 303D list, and a date of 2021 would be for everything added during this process. We received one set of written comments from Searles Valley Minerals, the discharger to Searles Lake. The lake was originally listed for salinity. We delisted it in 2002 due to the then interpretation of natural sources. It's now listed for salinity and for total petroleum hydrocarbon. The total petroleum hydrocarbon discharge and the salinity are covered by a cleanup and abatement order, and the listings are now in Category 4B with TMDLs not needed. Searles Valley Minerals comments addressed a lot of issues other than Section 303D, whether the lake is a water of the United States, needs for changes in beneficial uses. These are better addressed than other processes, such as our upcoming triennial review of the basin plan. The comments urge that we delist the lake for salinity because it's from natural sources. Unfortunately, this time around, the policy will not allow us to delist or not list because the problem is from natural sources. They also ask that we delist the lake for total petroleum hydrocarbons because they feel they're in compliance with the board order and the Department of Fish and Game takings permit for birds. We feel that it would be better to consider delisting at a later date when the order has been rescinded or modified, so we can officially say it is due for delisting. This is a summary of the State Water Board's issues that they have also discussed with EPA staff. State Water Board staff sent us a long set of informal comments back in May. I prepared responses to their comments, and we sent you an excerpt last week of what we felt to be the most important comments and responses. The latest comments and responses are in a handout that was distributed to you. This is just a summary of the issues. They were concerned that we hadn't used California Toxics Rule standards to assess inland surface waters. We did use the CTR standards for the Amargosa River, which is saline. It seems to be a misunderstanding on State Board staff's part. We do feel the standards are not really appropriate because they were based on toxicology data for marine and estuarine organisms, and there are no comparable data for inland saline water organisms. We put this as a comment in one of the appendices to the staff report, but our main reason for not recommending listing of the Amargosa River is temporal representation. Again, there's only one sample per year. The State Board was also concerned with our assessment of compliance with our temperature objective. The objective says that there shall be no change in temperature for waters designated for the cold freshwater habitat use, and no change greater than 5 degrees Fahrenheit for waters designated for the warm freshwater habitat use. State Water Board staff, well, first of all, I should mention that I assessed all narrative objectives that said no change or no change greater than such an amount using the baseline trend analysis provisions of the listing policy. This requires that you have at least 3 years of data and that you establish baseline conditions and you document trends in decreasing water quality. And since we have mostly quarterly swamp samples, we didn't feel that these were adequate to document either baseline or trend conditions. I'll show a slide on that in a minute. The comments also recommended that instead of our baseline trend approach, we use guidelines from the scientific literature based on trout, and one of the guidelines was a single maximum value of 21 degrees centigrade. There are others in the literature. The comments also urged us to use the quarterly data to document baseline trend conditions for turbidity. There seemed to be a misunderstanding on what we did with the total dissolved solids objectives, and I believe I answered that. So their major issue was with our treatment of temporal representation. We don't feel that quarterly or fewer samples are adequate for calculation of annual averages. Some of the State Board staff felt that we should be using these averages with the table in the listing policy. This is a graph of temperature over a 60-day period in Sechen Creek near Truckee between early May and late June. And this demonstrates that temperature changes on a daily basis. You have an increasing temperature, probably with increased air temperatures and decreased contribution from snowmelt runoff flows were decreasing during this period as temperature increased. So we feel we've made a general case for not listing on the basis of small sample numbers, but we did take a look at samples in relation to flows for a number of water body pollutant combinations, and we decided to recommend listing on the basis of the sort of information in the following graphs. For these graphs, the pinkish purple line near the bottom is flow data. The purple squares are individual sample points, and the green line is the water quality objective from the basin plan. This first graph is for total dissolved solids in the East Fork Carson River. For the annual averages, I believe the average was violated in 5 out of 5 years. The individual samples show about half of them are above the line and about half are below the line, and no clear trends, so we feel that we can justify not listing based on the small number of samples. This graph is for boron in the East Fork Carson River, And boron probably comes from natural sources at Grover Hot Springs, for those who are familiar with the watershed. Again, about half the data above the line, half below, and no clear trend. So we felt this justified not listing. Also, there, the sample number here is smaller than some of the other data sets. We had up to 16 samples in some cases, and I believe it's 9. So we're not recommending listing for boron. We are not recommending listing Mojave River for sulfate. Again, some samples above are on the line, some below, and they're actually more above than below, although the annual average data would justify listing based on the policy. We are recommending listing Mojave River for fluoride. This is for the station at the Upper Narrows, and you can see that all of the individual samples are above the standard. This is the site-specific water quality objective and basin plan. 9 out of 14 samples also violated the drinking water maximum contaminant level for fluoride. So we are recommending listing that. We were going to recommend listing for phosphorus on the basis of a lot of the samples being above the line, more above than below, and pretty steady group of samples above. Again, we're not recommending listing due to the quality problem. That's the last one of the graphs. If you want to go into the phosphorus problem, we could ask Tom Sook to explain exactly what's going on. If you don't, I'll go on with the presentation. Okay, we are going to prepare written responses to all public hearing testimony for the record, and all of the responses to comments will be posted on the internet and included in the electronic record. So following the hearing, we recommend that you adopt the resolution transmitting recommendations for the 303D list to the State Water Board, and your agenda packet includes a revised attachment C with 4 additional listings. We recommend that you your action exclude the 2 proposed listings for phosphorus. And we will inform State Water Board staff about the quality assurance problem with phosphorus, and if we can resolve whether it actually affects these water bodies, they may want to list it on their own initiative later in the process. So that concludes my presentation, and I'd be glad to answer questions.
Any questions? Yes.
I have some questions regarding the Searles Valley Mineral Company's comments.
Yes.
I believe you said one of their comments was in regards to Waters of the U.S. determination?
Yes.
I guess my first question is, does the 303D listing requirement only apply to Waters of the U.S.?
Yes.
And now maybe a question for David. Has Searles Valley, has Searles Lake been determined to be a water of the U.S.?
I couldn't tell you.
I'm not aware of any determination the Corps of Engineers has made. Usually the Corps is asked to make determinations in connection with a permitting action, and at least in some cases their permits expire and have to be renewed, and the determination expires with the permit.
So there has been no determination one way or another as to whether or not it's a water of the
U.S.? As far as I know.
So we're assuming for this listing that it is a water?
Yes.
Okay.
And this has been an issue in several listing cycles, and EPA has approved the list, including Searles Lake.
Mr. Dice, if I could just amplify a little bit on what Judith is saying. I think most of you are aware that up until the last few years, almost all surface waters were considered waters of the U.S. And then there have been a number of court rulings that have narrowed that interpretation. the key here is that there has not been a review of any water body under that new determination unless somebody comes forward and asks for a core permit. Okay. So we are taking the position, at least at this point, that until someone does a formal determination as to whether it is or is not, we are relying on basically the history that everything is until someone really comes forward with information or some formal process to determine it's not.
I think that's a safe position to take. Also, they made a comment regarding TDS, total high salinity,
mm-hmm.
being naturally occurring.
Yes.
And I guess we've made the determination that that is worthy of listing under 303B.
Before the listing policy was adopted, we proposed delisting of Searles Lake due to natural sources. We also justified delisting a number of other saline waters. During the 2006 update cycle, the State Water Board decided to relist Searles Lake and put it on the being addressed list due to our cleanup order. So under the policy, well, actually the policy is silent on natural sources. State Water Board staff's opinion is that we should list waters that have natural source pollution problems and then decide during the TMDL development process how much of the load should be assigned to natural sources. And I don't know, I guess we could adopt a TMDL with a total waste load and load allocation all to natural sources. It hasn't been done, but right now we have to handle things that way. There is as a process started with the basin planning staff of all the regional boards to try and work out a way to address natural sources on a statewide basis, and I'm part of that effort, so I hope we'll have some relief in the future.
Well, I guess this question is for Harold. I just don't see any benefit to be gained by listing an impairment due to a natural cause that can't be rectified.
I would totally agree with you. I think the problem we are sort of wrapped up in, unfortunately, is that the policy is silent on what the source is of the contaminant. And because of that, there is a requirement that it be listed for the natural source. I think that Judith's point, and we've been pushing this for the last 5 years, frankly, is to try to change beneficial uses in water quality, and therefore the applicability of the water quality objective when the only source of a contaminant is natural. Because that's really the whole thing stems from the fact that we have put certain beneficial uses that require a higher quality water, and yet that doesn't exist because of natural sources. And that's what drives this whole process. So, you know, Judith's comment about dealing with it through a TMDL where all the load is assigned to natural sources, it's better probably to go backwards and to remove the beneficial use in a way, but we don't really want to try to do this on a water-by-water body, because if there are so many water bodies in the state, there are many in our region, that are affected due to natural sources and don't meet the objectives because of that. And we need to find a streamlined way to do that through a policy, as opposed to a site-specific process that is very time-consuming and takes up a lot of staff time for not much benefit.
Some states have language in their regulations that says you shall not list for when the problem is due only to natural sources. We don't have that kind of language.
And when you say we, it's really the State Water Board in their statewide policy.
Yeah.
So it's not this board.
Okay, and you would... The same thing with the Mojave River for fluoride, because I mean, I know that that's all natural. So that would be the same.
Yes.
Same issue. Because we're adding something to the list that wasn't there before,
right?
Because we have to. Mm-hmm. It is definitely natural sources. Yes, James?
Do we have any input in being able to change this? I mean, obviously, when you just name everything, then you're stuck doing nothing. And as we talked earlier about the 80-20 rule, being able to focus the limited resources you have on the things that, that would most benefit from it, anytime that list just gets huge, it becomes unmanageable and a waste of your time. Do we have any input that would be able to change definitions or something that would be able to get a number of these things that either we can't change or is not worth thinking about off in a programmatic way?
We have,
or is that just the sun's going to come up tomorrow no matter what?
Well, the sun's going to come up tomorrow. It's the next day that I'm worried about. Okay. That is that we have attempted to put forward language that would affix it here in our region as it relates to these natural sources. And when we put forward that language, at least at the staff level, at a very high level at the State Water Board, they said, this is DOA, don't bother.
Mm.
Okay. So, again, trying to save staff resources of doing something and bringing it to you and having a DOA. What we did is we took it back, and I think Judith has been very active working with her counterparts at the other regions and the state board. I mean, they realize it's a problem. They're not saying it's not a problem.
Right.
They're trying to figure out a legal fix that would, you know, get us through this process in the simplest way possible.
Okay.
It's going to take a little time. I think the point I guess I would like to make on this is putting it on the list, as Judith pointed out, these TMDLs, many of them are way down the road.
Okay.
And I think it is very likely that many of these will come off the list before we start spinning our wheels on a TMDL.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes, sir.
I have a comment. I was looking at the two graphs for the Eastport Carson, and I have to say they went for boron and for TDS, and I absolutely agree with not listing them because plainly the high concentrations will only occur when there's low flow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yet you're saying that the standard would actually force you to list them, even though it plainly was
if you
the mechanism
treated them
is obvious.
Straight annual averages without consideration of flows or anything else.
Okay. Thanks.
And I think this again is the interpretation that where the state board staff came forward and said, we think the data is there to list it. And there is exception language in the policy, as Judith put up here, that when we believe that there are temporal issues that are creating this problem, so to speak, we should use that as a reason not to list.
Yes.
And so we're making that recommendation of not listing. It is very possible that the state board staff will convince the state board that it should be listed. But we will go down and explain to the state board, just like we're explaining to you, our rationale for not listing.
Also, we are collecting monthly swamp samples at some of these water bodies, so we should have a lot better data to consider the next time around, and we may be able to delist if we have to list.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have a comment card from a public entity, Jack Lene, USB EPA. Sorry, I mispronounced your name.
No problem. Probably
E looks like an A.
Fast. Thank you very much. Good evening, members of the board. My name is Jack Landy. I am the U.S. EPA Region 9 representative to the Lake Tahoe Basin and the TMDL liaison to this regional board. And I have provided written copies of my oral testimony here to help you follow along. I'd like to commend Lahont and staff for the tremendous effort and excellent job done in compiling the draft integrated report and in addressing comments raised about it, and thanks to Judith for characterizing those comments correctly. EPA tentatively considers that the majority of the assessment determinations are consistent with federal listing requirements. However, I would like to identify a few concerns with the current draft that we consider potential vulnerabilities to the regional board. Our overriding concern is that the draft report contains determinations that certain data and information are not applicable to making 303D listing recommendations, as you've just heard. Consequently, some waters and or pollutants may have been inappropriately omitted from the impaired waters list. The omission of waters from the list represents a potential vulnerability to this board, to the state board, and depending on contents of the final 303D list submittal from the state board, possibly to EPA. Appendix C of the staff report recommends not including in the proposed 303D list a number of water bodies for certain pollutants, including turbidity, total dissolved solids, and a variety of chemical-specific constituents, based on the lack of temporal representation of the available data. We understand the assertion that the natural variability of many water bodies in the Lahontan region makes quarterly or less frequent sampling unsatisfactory for assessment decisions. Federal listing regulations require states to assess available data in comparison to applicable water quality standards. EPA guidance does not establish a minimum threshold of data to complete an assessment. Thus, we encourage regional board staff to develop a listing methodology that takes into account limited data sets. Otherwise, EPA may find it appropriate to list some of these water body pollutant combinations. Impairments can also potentially be resolved by means of other available programs as necessary, such as increased or revised monitoring, site-specific objectives, or perhaps other approaches. Similarly, the region's draft integrated report appears to consider temperature data for certain water bodies as not temporally representative for purposes of evaluating baseline conditions and the existence of trend. Although EPA agrees that continuous temperature monitoring would be preferable for determining whether standards are being achieved, the absence of such information does not preclude the evaluation of applicable narrative water quality objectives and beneficial uses. Again, this may yield assessment decisions to list these water bodies. Furthermore, it appears that the assessments of certain water bodies designated to sustain cold water fisheries may not have used available literature-based evaluation guidelines in determining whether those water bodies are achieving that narrative temperature objective. Using such information to support an impairment decision is particularly appropriate in evaluating if habitat of the threatened Lahontan cutthroat trout is adequately protected. If appropriate, this information can be used in combination with monitoring information to further refine beneficial use designations. Finally, the draft report states, as Judith mentioned, that the California Toxics Rule, or CTR, saltwater aquatic life criteria are probably not appropriate for evaluating the Lahontan region's inland saline waters due to the lack of inland species having been used in developing those criteria. EPA considers that, in the absence of other numeric water quality objectives in the basin plan, CTR criteria should be applied for purposes of 303D listing, and that other programs, such as development of site-specific objectives, may be employed to address these cases as appropriate. I have discussed these concerns with the regional board as well as with state board staff and appreciate the efforts to address them. These discussions have explored approaches to not only evaluating impairment, but also what alternative responses are appropriate if impairment does exist. Regardless of your action today, I'm willing to work with staff and provide technical assistance on these matters, but wish to note that before the listing decisions reach EPA for approval, they will be assessed and reviewed by the state board, which will reconcile and compile them with other regional boards' lists. Therefore, we encourage further dialogue between the regional board and state board staff in addressing these concerns. Once EPA receives the final 303D list submittal from California, we will review the state's assessment decisions. We typically focus on those waters omitted from the state's list. Currently, we cannot definitively state whether we would add waters and or pollutants from this region to the state's list. However, we remain concerned that some assessments have been incompletely evaluated. Thanks for your attention, and I'm happy to address any questions.
Any questions? I have just one or two. Jack, thanks for the comments, and I think they're pretty straightforward. But in your paragraph number one there on the first page, mm-hmm. you encourage the regional board staff to develop a listing methodology. Would that be separate from the state board's listing policy?
It could be.
But lacking that, wouldn't EPA agree that we should use the state board's listing policy?
We actually have not approved that policy. It's not our role to have passed judgment on the policy itself. Mm-hmm. We have independent criteria by which we would make these assessments.
So you may even disagree with the state board's listing policy.
We may.
Okay.
It's possible.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I guess, would you agree, though, that the state board's listing policy, while it provides some numeric evaluation, it also provides an opportunity to impose professional judgment upon that.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that's really where the disagreement is in professional judgment of whether the data really is appropriate for listing or not.
Yeah, I agree.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, was there any testimony from any other interested parties? I have no other cards. Then I will close the public hearing and for comments.
I have one comment. I can't help but wonder what the economic implications are of having more or fewer water bodies listed. Because I can't see why what to me is a non-scientist appears to be not excellent science to drive what goes onto this list and how things are selected. That's just my opinion. It just seems like there must be something else driving it, like tax dollars and budgets. And we don't want to give up any of that money. If we have a high listing, then we have more money.
I honestly don't know what drives it at the federal level. So
Just the way it looks.
Yeah.
But what I heard you say earlier was since we started the top and worked down, whether the list is 97 or 73 really doesn't matter because we're never getting down to 73 anyway.
Not for a long, long time. If at all.
Our grandkids. Think about it. Okay. I actually have one other thing. The saline water bodies, that would be like Searles Lake, right?
Or I think Amargosa, Amargosa River is pretty highly saline.
We have mostly saline desert playa lakes, Searles Lake and many others in the Mojave Desert, and Mono Lake is a saline lake. We have some saline streams, including the Amargosa River and some, at least one Salt Creek in Death Valley. The threshold for salinity is a total dissolved solids of something like 3,000 milligrams per liter under the State Water Board Sources of Drinking Water Policy. EPA has a sliding scale between 1,000 milligrams per liter and 10,000 that you decide whether it's saline on a case-by-case basis. And that's, Searles Lake is much saltier than seawater.
But on the really salty ones, nothing lives in those bad boys, right?
There are some algae.
Mono Lake is quite salty.
Brine shrimp. Brine shrimp, oh yeah.
But nothing lives in Searles.
They have their own resources.
No. But nothing in Searles.
No. Yes, there is.
What?
What?
What did he say? He said there is something.
There are, depending on the salinity, there are algae. There are also what's called halo bacteria that have their own metabolic adaptations to very high salinity. If you see pink salt crest, that's the bacteria. Driven by Owens Lake.
Okay.
Any other comments?
I'm not like trucks.
Okay.
Yeah, don't eat it. The pre-salted herring. Thank you.
Any other comments?
If I may, just an observation. I did talk to Carol a number of months ago about are there ways that we could, things we could do as a county to help delist these impairments. So it's rather difficult to do if it's due to some natural causes. And hot springs, it's impossible. Just an observation.
What is the board's pleasure?
We just have to make the recommendation and vote on it. I move that we so do with the late changes.
Okay, that would be motion to adopt resolution R6T 2009.
I'll second that.
As amended, take with the new listing, which is adding.
The super good stuff.
The recommendations would be for the as recommended in the revised attachment C, with the exception of the proposed phosphorus listings for the East Fort Carson River and the West Wapa River.
Is that clear to everyone? We have a motion. Mr. Sandell seconded. Mr. Jardine. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, item 7 has been moved to tomorrow morning. The next thing I would like to mention is that our executive officer has decided to step down as executive officer and take the position of assistant executive officer. And the board has made the decision to appoint our assistant executive officer as our executive officer for the time being. And we will be looking at a job description and moving forward in the future as soon as we can.
I move that be the order.
We don't have to make a motion.
Oh, cool. All right, just check. Just in case.
It's done. So with that, congratulations, I think. Did you have anything you want to say? Probably not.
Well, I'll sit out there. Yes.
You want to finish up your report then? We'll move back to item 1, I think it was.
Right.
Yes. We moved around item 2. Harold had a little bit to finish up on the EO report, so. You were on your added comments.
Yeah. And I do want to say something. I think it's and it's to all of you and to many other board members over the last 20 years frankly, I have enjoyed this job. I've enjoyed working with each and every one of you as individuals and as a board. Because that's what you are. You're individuals, but you act as a board. And I think it's been relatively cohesive over the many years. There's always ups and downs. And I remember many of both ends of it, I guess is the way to put it. I appreciate your understanding of where I am today and what I have decided to move on to. And the support of appointing me as your interim executive officer until you find a new one. I think I had mentioned to many of you that I will support the new person and hope to get them up to speed and before I eventually retire. So,
thank you for, you're still going to be here, but I'm going to for me, it's been a great 13 years. Eric's a little longer than that, but and we all have had our ups and downs, but it's always come out and worked together as a team. And thank you very much.
I wanted to cover a few more things that I wasn't able to this afternoon. First one is having to do with Truckee Donner PUD. And these seem minor, but I think they're very important. Truckee Donner PUD was proposing to expand an electrical substation in the Donner area and apply to us for what's called 401 water quality certification because they needed to apply a core permit. And I won't get into too much detail other than to say is they the existing substation is on one side of a unnamed tributary to Donner Lake, and the proposed expansion was on another side, and they wanted to completely culvert the entire length of the tributary in both sides of the property they own. And we looked at that in relationship to your basin plan and the exemptions that are allowed within there. And I made the determination that I could not approve the 401 water quality certification. So we denied certification. And it was a letter that I signed. Truckee Donner has decided to petition that action because if I take an action on behalf of the board, it's an action of the board. So they petitioned that to the State Water Board to review that determination. We've been in discussions with them, and they have put the petition in abeyance for 30 days. We do have a meeting set with them for later this month where I'm going to go on site and take a look at it and see if there's at least some resolution or potentially some explanation to this and try to work through it. I'm not going to guarantee anything, but at least we're going to talk some more on site and see what's going on. I really want to find out a little bit more about the project itself and why this is an absolute necessity versus just a, we've told them that we would be happy to give them approval to put a road across the creek so that they can get from one side to the other and do the operations, but for some reason they don't think that's feasible as part of their project proposal.
Are you familiar with the area?
This is
the off-ramp of Route 80 that goes down to Donner Lake. It's correct. Just below the freeway.
Right.
That whole area has been enormously disturbed. The course of building Route 80, building the off-ramp, there's probably nothing natural within 1,000 feet of that. You have to go probably up to the other side of the freeway to pick up the natural drainage, and even then I'm not sure how much that's been disturbed. Yeah.
There are stretches of natural drainage in there. I mean, whether they've been disturbed or not is another question, but there's a lot of culverts in there.
So I suspect that their issue is going to be that they need a ground plane, an electrical ground plane underneath all of the actual electrical equipment. It needs to be continuous, and that they want to have it consolidated in one place so that they don't get differing potentials on the ground from the fact that things are too far apart. And they may need to have a more or less continuous plot, and they probably need to have maybe two places. I'm not sure what their sequence of operation will be, but they may be building a complete replacement, in which case they'd have to build it entire before they could remove the old one. But I don't know anything factual about what they're going to do.
Well, like I said, we're going to work through it and see what's going on here. The second item that I want to just mention to you is every summer since President Clinton was here in the Ta Basin, one of the state senators from either Nevada or California has hosted what's called a Tahoe Forum, in which they sort of relook at what's happening with the Tahoe Basin, what the funding is, what are some of the key issues. This year's forum is scheduled for August 20th, which is a Thursday, in Nevada at Round Hill Pines. Senator Ensign from Nevada is hosting this year's forum. They usually bounce it back and forth between usually Reed and Ensign and Feinstein. Senator Boxer usually has not participated in this, but between the three of them, they typically one of them will host it. It is possible that the governors from either California or Nevada or both may show up. We have some indication that the new U.S. EPA administrator may come out. The Secretary of the Interior may be there. So it's a pretty high-level event that, again, focuses effort of what's going on Tahoe and just keeps the perspective high for efforts, for funding, because, frankly, without the funding, many of the work that's being done around the lake would probably stop. And so it's real important to a lot of people that this maintain a pretty high profile. Some of the issues that the themes of this summit, and they haven't been decided on, and it really is up to the host to decide the themes of the this forum. But some of the things they're talking about is the environmental improvement program update, and what this is the efforts that are being put into meeting the TRPA, the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency, environmental thresholds around the lake. And there are a number of thresholds beyond water quality, recreation, air quality, a number of other things. The first round or the first 10 years of the environmental improvement program was a little over $1 billion. That 10-year period ended just recently in last year. And so it's time really to look to the next 10 years. And at least what is being put forward for the next 10 years is a $2.4 billion program, significantly above the last year's program. You know, that's what's being looked at. Obviously, it would have to go through a lot of different appropriations and other things, but at least it's a blueprint. And that's really what this is all about, is more of a blueprint. There could be some announcements that could come out of this. This forum, typically there's an annual allocation of funds from the Southern Nevada Public Lands Management Act, which is where lands in the Las Vegas area are being sold, and that money is going into many projects in the state of Nevada. But as a result of, I think it was Senator Ensign who allowed or put some legislation forward that allowed some of that money to be used in the Lake Tahoe Basin, and it wasn't specific for Nevada. So every year there's a process that we go through here in the basin where projects are put forward and funded, and I think this is round 9 or round 10 of the Southern Nevada Lands Act process. And typically the Secretary of the Interior uses this opportunity to come forward and announce the results and the fact that this year they're putting X number of millions of dollars towards projects in the Tahoe Basin. So there could be an announcement about that at the meeting. The governors could talk a little bit about the Bi-State Fire Commission and what's been happening on that issue. Also, I think it was the last meeting here in the Tahoe Basin, you had a really good presentation on aquatic invasive species, and there may be an opportunity for the governors to sign a management plan that would make the efforts under that plan available for funding, so there could be an opportunity there to use this forum as a announcement, proclamation sort of thing. That's what it's for, just to maintain that visibility. This is by invite only, but if you would like to go, I think the chances of getting an invite for a board member are very high, but I do need to know in advance. Typically, one or two state board members come down. It's possible that Linda Adams, Secretary of Cal EPA, may be here. So if any of you are interested in attending, let me know pretty soon and we'll get your name into the invite list. So we do have the ability to put names forward, but as I said, it is by invitation only.
When did you say this was?
It is Thursday, August 20th in the morning.
Where's the location of that?
It's a place called Round Hill Pines, which is basically just across the state line on the south eastern shore. See, I've covered a lot of the budget items that I really wanted to cover earlier. One last thing that may come before you at public forum at a future meeting. We've had a number of contacts from a citizen in the Victorville area who is very unhappy about a rate increase that Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation Authority is putting forward. And the issue that the citizen has is that he believes that a significant part of this rate increase is due to a requirement of the water board to dechlorinate the effluent that's being discharged to the Mojave River. And you know, his point that at least the staff has talked with him, and they have gleaned from him that his two points are: this is the wrong time to be imposing a rate increase, and to some extent about less concern about the critters in the river. So that's his basic point. We have tried to talk with him. We will continue a dialogue with him to the extent we can. That he wants to keep it up, but he indicated that he would be apparently speaking to the Victorville City Council. He may be talking to the State Water Board about how do I get this requirement changed. He may come before your board at a public forum or other opportunity that might have when you meet the southern part of the region. But I just wanted to give you a heads up that there's an individual out there that apparently is very upset about this and believes it is the regional board's problem.
Is the requirement to dechlorinate something new?
I think it's a relatively new requirement. I don't think it's been around that long, but it is part of a larger package of treatment plant improvements that the district is going through, the authority.
Wouldn't we at some point have a dollar figure for that part of the process versus the
entire
related rate increase to be attributed to is probably 1% or something?
That's my guess.
It'd be nice to know that number.
Is that I think it's a scale issue here. It's not $7 a month for dechlorination.
This is an ongoing issue.
And Mike has been dealing pretty well with this to the extent that this person is willing to engage with us. So. Okay, that's all.
That's it?
Had to add? Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Harold. The last item on tonight's agenda is board members' comments.
Happy to be here.
Mike?
Okay.
James? Eric?
Concern for a perilous future.
That's all.
There's a change in leadership.
Yes.
Concern.
Keith? I'm just grateful for the years of service Harold has offered the board, and I want to thank him for staying around to help see us through this change in leadership.
It's been a long time. Harold's been here, let's see, there was Roy, Oz, I forget who was before Roy.
Roy was it.
Was that Roy was the first? First, and then Oz. So we, and
John said, Roy reminds me of John Leggett.
Oh, yes.
Who?
Yeah. Yes.
Before you were born.
So the only three are there. There's just Roy and Oz and Harold. Yeah, thank you. Hearing no other comments, and Harold kind of reported on the chair's conference call yesterday, and budget, that's the big thing. Thank you, everyone, and we will adjourn until 8:30 tomorrow morning. We only have one item on the agenda, which is item 7.